You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Well, it's mid-April and I'm sitting here in a meat coma exhausted in Hamburg, Germany, so that can only mean one thing. Welcome to another AIX Roundup, Aircraft Interiors Expo every year in Hamburg. Always incredible and interesting and bizarre to see what is going to be the next generation of aircraft bits and bobs and seats and toys and whatever. And once again, like most of the past few years, joined by Jason Rabinowitz, airline flyer, to talk about what we saw, what's cool, and what is never actually going to fly.
We have a lot of both this year, I think. We always see a lot that is just never going to fly, don't we?
Well, and that's good, right? I mean, innovation.
It's innovation.
You could argue this is like the fail often, fail fast mantra.
Right.
Some of these companies don't fail as fast as they should.
Some are a slow burn. Some are more like a nitro-powered flame.
The fact that we're still seeing the Skyrider.
Yeah, that was at the top of my mind. That's just, I mean, it's not even something that's not going to fly just because it's innovative and too futuristic. It's just stupid.
Well, you know, if you can fit 240 people in a 737-800, someone's got to be happy about that.
You could fit them on, but maybe not get them off.
Let's talk about some pretty futuristic looking things that a couple vendors actually hope will fly. And rather than the Skyrider, which is all about making, you know, passengers less comfortable for the sake of the airline, these are a couple ideas that could actually make passengers more comfortable. And that's bunk beds.
Yeah. One of the marquee things of the show this year was a joint product or concept, I guess, not really a product, Airbus and Zodiac Aerospace, whom you might remember from other projects like United Polaris seat.
Or A350 lavatories that didn't quite work right.
Right. So mixed history there, but they're kind of on the rebound. But anyway, it's basically a lower deck module where instead of putting in a cargo container in the belly of an A330 or eventually an A350, there will be living spaces, either bunk beds or Airbus had 3D printed versions of like a study or a living room or like a kid's play center.
Yeah, they had a TV lounge. They had a bar area for economy class. There were some interesting concepts, but everybody admitted that if it sells, the thing that's going to sell it is the bunk beds. And that's because the airline can charge a nice premium to allow people to sleep in them, even from an economy class thing, right? You don't get it for the whole trip, but you can pick your 3, 4, 6, whatever hours, head downstairs and get a true flat bed for a little bit of time.
Right, especially on some of these flights now that Qantas and Singapore will end up doing that are pushing nearly 20 hours of total butt-in-seat on airplane time. If I could pay even a good chunk of change to go below deck onto a real bed for an hour or two, I think they'll have people lining up in the aisle to do that.
Yeah, which ironically creates a different set of problems around how do you control access, how do you make sure that the person who only booked the first 6 hours of the flight gets out when their turn is done. How do you address all of the regulatory safety concerns about evacuations and things like that? And it's not going to be occupied during taxi takeoff landing, so some of the evacuation stuff isn't as critical. But there are plenty of questions. It's in the, you know, maybe.
Maybe. It's far from the most outlandish thing we've ever seen at the show. It's something I want to happen, and it has backers that are powerful enough to make it happen if the industry can wrap its head around actually doing it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of concept where these are vendors are big enough, they sort of know what they're doing, that they'll put a concept like this out there and then hope that an airline shows up and says, you know, how much would this really cost? Okay, let's give it a go. And the minute an airline says yes, they'll then actually start manufacturing it. But working towards the finalized design to manufacture it. So very much just a concept, but it was interesting.
Yeah, it's wouldn't also be the first time passengers have access to anything down below in the lower deck. Thomas Cook and Lufthansa on A330s and A340s, respectively, have laboratories on the lower deck. There's a little stairway in the rear of the or middle of the economy cabin, and you just walk on down the stairs into the lab. So it's been done, but just not something like bunk beds.
Sure. And I will say, for those two airlines on those two types, people love them. The airline loves it because it opens up more seats to sell. Passengers love it because instead of like bending over awkwardly, the curve is on the other end, right? So instead of like the curve digging into your shoulders or whatever, when you try to walk into a lab, the curve is at your ankles where you don't need as much shoulder space because they're your ankles. But yeah, so it's not impossible. It's not unprecedented, but it certainly has challenges.
Yeah.
Premium economy bunk beds.
Interesting. Are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
I am. And so this is actually a startup run by sort of a very frequent flyer and entrepreneurial kind of buddy of mine, and he was around sort of talking up a new concept that he's working on. And this is, again, a concept, not a product, but he's working through sort of the design process towards not actual certification, but something that the FAA says could be certified.
Right.
Conceptually, like, you know, you got to get the design right that they say, okay, if you build it this way, it probably will be certified. And what he's talking about is essentially taking a reverse herringbone layout that we see frequently enough in business class, going double decker on it and making it a premium economy product with a basically a stagger that lets you still get a decent amount of personal space sitting up for taxi takeoff landing and, you know, reading or whatever. But then you can sort of semi pivot and lay down in this herringbone position, and that gets you sleeping quarters.
Yeah. I mean, we saw some renderings or design or whatever, and it looked like, I guess it's possible, but it, to me, it seems like something that's too radical of a change for any airline to be first to jump at it, because we've seen far, far less ambitious seating designs at AIX, like Thompson's Cozy Suite, which apparently was flying around on one airline for a while, but that just didn't get picked up, which was a twist on conventional economy seating, but not dramatic. Yeah, this was like turning seating convention on its head.
Yeah, well, stacking it on its head, let's say. And the Cozy Suite, that was the one that was sort of, instead of rows going straight, they sort of staggered a little bit to give extra shoulder room, right?
Right.
And hip room. So you never were actually sitting directly next to someone, but it also raised challenges around where the masks would fall and evacuation and
moving parts and stuff.
Yeah. But... so, yeah. Or, I mean, even the slidey seat. There's a vendor that's got a product where, like, the aisle is wider because the aisle seat slides over the middle seat. And you do that during, you know, boarding and deplaning to make the aisle wider so bags don't hit people. Which works great if you can convince all your aisle passengers to board last. But, you know, there are some interesting things about it. I mean, the renderings, again, one of those things that, wow, this looks cool. And if you can, because you can double the density, that sort of offsets the cost factor, the higher cost factor and engineering factor on the seating. If you could really get there and get me a premium economy seat at current prices that sort of converted into a bed, I'd love that. At the same time, one of the reasons we don't have first class anymore is because business class became flat beds.
Right.
And that was the compelling value of business class. If premium economy now has flat beds, why do you have business class?
Unless and then you want the meal and the champagne and all that.
So there are those things, and it, obviously there is more personal space if you don't have someone stacked above you or below you, but it certainly could be an interesting take on this sort of cyclical evolution. I guess from that perspective, maybe the only good news we have is that the cheap seats can't get all that much cheaper, putting Skyrider aside, all that much tighter. I mean,
yeah.
Or as they get tighter, they're at least finally almost comfortable at those tighter pitches.
Yeah, all the new generation slimline seats.
Can we call this slimline 2?
Yeah, let's call them slimline version 2 at this point, or even version 3. I wouldn't say they're the best things in the world, but yeah. It is markedly better than an old school thick cushion seat at 31 inches, even when they're pitched down to 29 or even 28.
Yeah, and markedly better knee room.
Right.
The vendors have focused a ton on knees and shins, moving the bars up. So if you do try to extend your legs forward, your shin doesn't sort of crush into the seat. There's like that bar across the back of the seat in front of you. Getting the right knee room available, so they call it living space or personal space. The challenge with those is that the seat back is right in your face.
Right. And when they recline, it is even more so in your face.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can see all the ones I think we sat in were adjustable, like the airline could set just how much they wanted it to recline, and they were all set to allow the most,
right?
So that the vendors could show off the product. And when we sat in them at 28, 29 inches, you know, it was, I could see riots breaking out on planes.
Yeah,
at that point.
They're making it better, but it's also still just a matter of physical space. At some point, you've just taken so much space away, you can only give so much space back at the knee until there's just nothing left.
Yeah, it's one of those, well, I mean, I could walk when I landed, but kind of moments.
Right.
Moving from the seats to the galley, I think there's possibly your and my favorite thing we saw. And we saw it at 8:30 a.m.
Before the show even opened.
Of the show. Let's talk about cookies.
Cookies are good, especially when they're warm.
Yes. Warm chocolate chip cookies might just be the most glorious thing in the world. Especially on an airplane.
Yeah. Especially when that smell permeates the entire cabin, but only the people up front in first class get it.
Yeah, well, that's a little awkward. So Rockwell Collins, formerly known as BE Aerospace.
Soon to be known as UTC Aerospace or whatever.
They make seats and galleys and lavatories and many other things. But one of their new sort of products for the galley this year is a cookie warmer tray. and champagne chiller tray, and it's the Peltier effect.
Hey, I was just about to look that up, and you nailed it.
And so one of these days we'll actually read what the Peltier effect is.
It makes cookies warm and champagne cold.
Basically, it's you put a small electric current across the right superconductor special element thing.
Tiny little chip.
Yeah, tiny little, basically circuit chip. The guy was showing us basically the size of like a penny or a nickel.
Not even.
Yeah, it's a very small thing. And you do the current one way and it heats and the other way it cools, which is kind of neat. So you have like, you know, one set of circuitry and a switch that controls what you're doing. But you can create a heating or cooling situation without big compressors.
Right.
So no noise, no fans, no, much less energy consumed. It really is ideal for an airline implementation. I have no idea how much more it costs than a refrigerator with a fan and a motor and a compressor, but it was really neat to see that. And the fact that they gave us, you know, cookies for breakfast didn't hurt.
So it was built into the side of one of their galley units as a self-service thing for passengers. So you walk up and you grab a cookie out of the bin and it's warm, or you grab some champagne and it's cold.
So I'm guessing the champagne wouldn't be in a economy class, but you could see them doing a soda chest.
Right, just put a 2-liter bottle of Sprite or whatever.
Or even just cans. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be the buckets, right? They could put a little door on it.
You had
and
a
make
better
cans.
Idea for the buckets.
I thought we should put ice cream sundae supplies in the buckets, but again, sloppy, messy.
People are the worst and it would go
chocolate dripping everywhere. Although all cookies are going to be everywhere too. But it's interesting is even in economy, the sort of self-service snack bar thing, I don't know if it's because the airlines really care about us or that the flight crew don't want to take care of passengers as much. And so, probably a little bit of both, right? But having sort of self-serve, even in economy, for hot and cold, is really nice. And it doesn't have to be...
Well, JetBlue does it now on their Mint 321s. Yep. They have a galley up front, or a self-serve station with a bunch of, with a whole thing of chips and a refrigerated thing for sodas.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. Again, I'm sure it's expensive and fancy, and who knows if an airline will ever buy it. But on the likelihood of we could see this on an airplane someday soon, I'd put that, of all the neat stuff we saw, towards the top of the list, just because...
12 to 18 months.
You think so? Yeah, like every other project in this industry?
Pretty much everything.
Some of them are 36 months away. No, I do think it's possible. Yeah. I think it's viable that that would fly.
Well, it's possible, and there's no reason it wouldn't.
I think it's probable.
Yeah, on a high-end airline.
Well, there are enough airlines trying, especially when it goes back to our ultra-long-haul conversation, there's enough airlines trying to do the sort of self-service catering thing on those just because, even if you do have a flight attendant working in the galley and whatever, one or two flight attendants can handle a lot more passengers if some of them are helping themselves.
Right.
And... you know, it's not just chips / crisps anymore that are, you know, all shelf-stable room temperature. So that's a nice little upgrade.
Cookies and champagne.
Yeah, I'm guessing the bottles of Vuv that we saw will not be served in economy where I'm flying. Power at your seat. How do you want it?
I like when power's at my seat.
How do you want your power these days?
I want it AC. I want it high-powered USB. I want it USB-A and USB-C. Why not lightning while we're at it? Maybe wireless?
I've got good news for you, Jason.
What? Tell me more.
We can do all of that now.
What?
I don't know what you meant by lightning, but the other stuff
we can do. I want to. Oh. Yeah.
Well, that's just USB-A.
Yeah.
Okay, I was confused. Anyway, there's a few major companies that do power. Astronics is the biggest. There's IFPL. There's DigiCore. All of them had products in this space. All of them were on display, and all of them are actually able to be installed on airplanes now, or close. Some of them are certified. Some of them are basically, we just need the airline to come up and say yes, and we'll file the paperwork.
Right.
And, you know, USB-C, for example, we're finally seeing airline, or at least the vendors, getting ahead of consumers.
Yeah, it's actually already out in the wild. British Airways on their Gatwick 777 refurbs, the ones that unfortunately went 343, now have USB-C right in the Panasonic IFE screen.
In addition to USB-A.
Yes, they have both.
So
and two headphone jacks.
So you can split and share for a movie if you brought your own, or if you have the weird split pin ones, those also work.
Right, it's there so the old airline style double prong ones can work, or you can use both for stereo.
Because both are wired for stereo sound, which is the way it should be.
Yeah.
But USB-C, and they're talking 60-watt USB-C, this is the stuff that can actually charge a laptop.
Right, no more trickle charging your flip phone.
Yeah. Didn't we used to do that through the headphone jack?
Something like that.
Don't you remember that? Like you had to turn the volume all the way up to get more electrons flowing?
We've come a long way in a short time.
Yeah. And also contactless power.
Yes.
We saw this on the Astronics booth. As power goes, I'd say this was the most impressive one, not because it just worked, all of them sort of just work, but the range, the sort of way they had it marked, like here's the rectangle where your phone is supposed to be. And if you put your phone in that rectangle lined up, it worked. But if you put your phone
sideways
or 30 degrees offset or only half in the square,
it worked.
It also worked. And so it's neat that they have a sort of big enough charge positioning on that product to make it, It's customer friendly.
Right. There's another company tweeted at me, actually, that said they've been doing that for 2 years, but I haven't seen it out anywhere on any seat.
So. Or at the show, quite frankly. So
yeah.
Maybe we need to visit more booths.
I guess so.
Considering we visited like 50 this week, do you think that's possible?
No, they did tell me to come by, but I forgot to actually do that. Cobalt Aerospace. There
okay.
it is. Yeah, they've been doing it for 2 years, but if you're listening to this, who knows if you are, reach out.
Yeah. So those were some of the like standard things we saw, I'll say, right? That's our normal rundown. I'm not going to get into the connectivity stuff too much today just because there wasn't really much new.
Yeah.
One new company launched a full service connectivity solution, and then when we stopped by the booth, they couldn't actually answer any questions, so that was awesome.
Well, they have global coverage by using something.
Yes. Something. With a satellite based in Saudi Arabia that covers the whole globe.
Magic.
And a satellite antenna, an aircraft antenna on display in their booth that we can't take pictures of.
No pictures,
even though it's in a giant clear case in the front of the booth.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, we're skeptical of their chances. But beyond the like standard stuff, there was one of the things I love about this show is there's always crazy shit out there.
Always.
And part of it's just like stuff we don't think about, right? There was a whole section of one of the halls dedicated to like various connectors. There's a section dedicated to the different leather coverings of seats or fabric coverings of seats. You've got people taking those raw materials and processing them. You've got people retrofitting them. Like just an incredible array of random different things. So I want to talk through some of the crazy stuff we saw. What's one of your favorites?
One of my favorites, I guess it may not be crazy. It's just weird. Back at IFPL, one of my favorite things of the show was they were still displaying and showing off these old, ridiculously old connectors. Like when I flew Virgin Atlantic out here on a five-year-old A330, it still had on a relatively new aircraft the iPod jack along with the RCA connect gold-plated connectors to hook up like your camcorder.
That's your yellow, red, and white connectors. Yeah. Two audio channels, one video channel.
Like there's no AC outlet on these seats, so I'm confused how I'm supposed to use that. Like, how do I plug in my NES system and play Mario? But like, this is the kind of shit that they're still selling and displaying on their booth because airlines signed up for.
Didn't the it was probably 10 years ago now. Atari, there was like an Atari 2600 joystick with 10 games built in that was an RCA out.
Yeah, there's a couple of these retro things.
It was battery power, though. We could actually play that.
Yeah, and the Virgin Atlantic IFE system actually still supported it. But like, this stuff is so ridiculously out of date. Apple ditched the 30-pin dock connector like 5 years ago at this point. Yeah. And airlines are still installing it because that's what they chose.
Not the 30-pin. You're talking about the...
No, the 30-pin dock connector.
I thought you were talking about the mini DIN that looks like a little round.
Yeah, but that only worked with the 30-pin dock connector.
Okay.
But yeah, it looks like the little round thing as video, and that like nobody has used that thing in 5 years. But
I don't think anybody used it ever.
Ever. You could go to AIX and equip your aircraft with it.
I think they were also just showing off stuff that they have delivered in the past, not necessarily stuff they were trying to market.
They said that they're still selling it.
Right, because they made it once, and like you don't destroy the tooling unless you're Boeing, and you think the 757 is never going to... Oops.
Awkward.
One of my favorites was... random structures booth I was walking by. And these are guys that make basically like the various struts and posts and columns that connect things on airplanes.
To other things.
Yeah. And so they had a range of products from like a little 6-inch to, and like think about like the landing gear, the hydraulics, the posts that are involved in that, or just any of these random long poles that you see on planes. And most of them are made out of aluminum these days because it's light and it's strong.
Right.
And I don't even remember the name of this vendor, so it's a little awkward. But they were showing off some of their sort of conversion to carbon fiber stuff. We've been talking about carbon fiber in the airplane industry for a long time. Super strong still and super lightweight, even lighter than aluminum.
Expensive, but worth it.
Expensive up front, but, costs are coming down. And the amount you save on fuel, especially as fuel continues to go up. This morning, Delta said, we expect $70 fuel to be the norm going forward. It's never going to get cheaper than that again. So, right, we're not getting much cheaper now. And they actually showed off, straight aluminum, a solid carbon fiber, and then this, like, woven diamond mesh carbon fiber strut. And it was basically, 99% air, but...
Somehow claimed to have the right strong, with
the structure. And I think it may have just, they may have just made that one to look pretty, but they're talking about sort of developing some of these structures in a way that can have the strength of the originals. I know... Airbus last year was talking about 3D printing of sort of bone patterns where it's like sort of random, but your bone isn't just a column. It's like,
right.
It's got weird crosses and structures and whatever in it. So, and it's not it's not a consistent pattern. It's, it does look sort of random. So just things like that were really cool. There was also the 3D TV guys.
Yeah, that came out of like nowhere.
And they were a Crystal Cabin Award nominee. They did not win, I don't think.
No.
But they had a they have a product that is essentially 3D television without glasses.
Which is fascinating because I'm happy that the 3D TV fad passed and went away because I can't really ever wear glasses over my glasses. It's
horrible. Do they still make 3D TVs
though? No, they're all gone in favor of 4K.
Sweet.
Good riddance. But they still do movies in 4K, which pisses me off.
You mean in 3D?
Yeah. So like 90% of the screens, and at least in New York City, will be 3D. And like if I want to actually see a 2D movie, you have to find a tricky time.
Bummer. But
this TV would kind of solve that problem somehow.
It worked.
Yeah. I don't know how, but I sat down in front of it. Like critters on the screen were popping out at me.
Yeah. And so it's not a traditional screen. You have to use their special screen. And the current version uses eye tracking cameras.
Yeah. I think they were using an Xbox Kinect eye tracking thing, like just repurposed.
It's nice when someone else has already done all the hardware development for you.
Yeah.
They plan, you know, obviously plan on making changes so that those move inside the frame and whatnot to sort of make it more seamless. But like you said, we were watching on like a 42-inch television or whatever, and like it takes a minute for your brain to finally
to release out what the hell is happening.
Right, yeah, like you start getting vertigo to start, and then your brain finally like releases your eyes as it starts to figure out where your eyes are and track them correctly. And it really works. There's something in the screen that sort of does a crazy shifting and like varies what you're seeing. And it was shocking once my eyes adjusted and my brain sort of turned off just how well they were able to render that.
I'm not sure why they were displaying that at an aircraft show. Why not just like the CES or for consumers? Like, why are they jumping straight to airplanes?
Well, they're a Hamburg-based company, and so they were part of the Hamburg stand.
True.
And it's local for them. CES, I imagine, would be way more expensive.
Yeah.
But also, I could see, you know, little 3D screen in your seat back instead of what we're dealing with today.
Well, let's get HD first, right?
Really?
Yeah, I'd rather get the basic. We can't even do the basics right. How many times have you gotten on an aircraft with a relatively new system that's supposed to do HD, and the content is SD, letterboxed, and pillarboxed, and the audio sucks?
Yeah.
Pretty much every time.
Yeah, there's a couple that'll let you do like, oh, and we can stretch it to fit, and even that, like, they stretch it the wrong way, I feel like.
Well, you know what'll fix this? Moore's Law.
Huh?
Moore's Law will fix this, right?
Moore's Law. Moore's Law might actually solve this problem for us, so we got that going for us. Inside joke, I'm still bitter. Jason's just rubbing salt in that wound.
It's a lot of salt.
The last one, I think, this is a product from last year, and one that was pretty cool. It actually won the Crystal Cabin Award last year for materials, or some category that includes materials, and it's a new foam for seat cushions. And one of the interesting challenges with the seat cushions is you need something that's sort of soft and comfortable. It also has to be firm enough to support you. It also has to be sort of the correct mechanical properties to survive a 16G crash test and also be non-flammable and also be a whole bunch of other things for certification reasons.
A lot of and.
Yeah, there's a lot of and there. And what we usually end up with is something that feels a lot like a park bench.
Pretty much. More often than not.
Yeah, and there's a softer version of the park bench, but it's getting, you know, right, this is going back to our early discussion about the super thick padded, whatever. Those probably actually, a lot of them were designed under older systems that weren't 16G necessarily for the crash testing.
Right.
And also just you had more space to work with, so you had different choices of materials. But there's a product called OctaSpring, an Octa like 8. But it was really interesting. Instead of flat panels of cushioning, they'd use little cylindrical columns. And they're, again, sort of a grid-shaped thing. And so with different weight / firmness of the foam, they create zones essentially within the seat, and so you have different firmness in different places for your back versus your butt versus your thighs or whatever, and versus your shoulders. And it has, because it's not solid pieces, it has a lot more give to it, but somehow it also seems to be better at actually like supporting the body.
Yeah, it's good, and it's already actually in some seats, isn't it?
But it's available to be sold,
right?
Which
is a big step.
Yeah, so they've got a seat manufacturer who bought into it. Is willing to sell it in one of their business cabin seats.
And they're prominently displaying it on their stand.
Yeah, that's the Stelia Solstice 3 had the OctaSpring on display. So that was, and the Solstice actually sells too, doesn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think they've got a couple airlines lined up. I think we were talking with them about that. So they've got none of them with this, but
right. They've
got four or five airlines lined up with this seat. So it's one of those things where this is, again, on the are we likely to see this in the air? This one stands a pretty high chance of doing it. One of the other real interesting little tidbits about this product. I was talking about the testing. Apparently, when they do the 16G testing, most of the seats protect you, but massively deform.
Yeah.
Right? Sort of like a bike.
Like a car, crumple zones.
Yeah, you've got crumple zones. Or a bike helmet where it's supposed to shatter, but that's the absorption of all the shock, and your head survives. This seat, apparently, they pulled it out after the test, and it was, because of the way the foam was set up, it just bounced back to its normal shape, and like they could still use it.
Like a car made of plastic?
Well, no, because plastic would just die.
I don't know. I've crashed into a couple things with like plastic cars, and you just kind of snap the pieces back together.
Oh, yeah, but you can't undo the crumple.
No.
This basically didn't crumple. It crumpled the way it needed to, but then it uncrumpled itself.
Right.
So, anywho, parting shot, final thoughts?
I forgot to eat my Toblerone. I'm pretty disappointed about that.
Well, you've got a long flight home tomorrow.
Yeah. But otherwise, no, it was a good show. Nothing outlandishly stupid, I don't think, like we see every couple years. A little sober out in the connectivity section.
Yeah, there's a lot of hand-wringing and sort of pacing back and forth, wondering what's actually going to happen.
Yeah, if you're on a flight with connectivity anytime soon, maybe buy a couple sessions just to keep some of these guys going.
Actually, one funny thing you mentioned, just when we're talking about this up, there's apparently one company that got bought out after they reserved their booth. So there was like a big sign on it that said, "Hi, are you looking for us? Please come find us at our new booth."
Where is this? I didn't see that.
It was PDT, which is now part of Astronics.
Well, at least it wasn't like Rockwell.
Yeah.
If you're looking for BE, go to Rockwell.
Yeah. No, they managed to combine their booths into one ginormous one, so that was pretty good. Actually, no, they still had two.
No, they still had two, yeah.
But those were never together before, so no. I'm not sure if they ever will be.
A couple have entirely separate. Rockwell, Zodiac, Airbus, Lufthansa has like three.
Well, it's Lufthansa Group. They have systems,
Lufthansa Group, they have Lufthansa
Technic
Catering. Here's the Lufthansa
system. They also do SkyShafts, right.
Quack.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't do that in the microphone, though. That's going to really annoy people.
Meh.
And that's my guest, folks. When I ask him to stop annoying you, he says, meh.
Yeah, we're done here anyway.
We're done. So you can find Jason on the Twitters at Airline Flyer. You can find Dots, Lines, and Destinations online at Dots, Lines or moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment. Tell us what you think about some of these products. Will the bunk beds ever fly? When they do, are you going to buy one? Are you going to be too worried about hitting your head and claustrophobic and someone really sneaking on you and being weird?
It's a hot take right there.
Yeah, that's what I'm good for. Anyway, happy travels. Take care.